Hi, I'm Nick Gregoriadis, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. The show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey guys, thanks for tuning into the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show. I know I've been away for a while. I was focusing on the preparation for my match at Fight to Win in Scottsdale, Arizona, which just happened the past weekend. If you guys want to watch the match, you can find it on Flow Grappling. And if you guys want to support the show, please check out my store. It's store.jiu-jitsubrother.com or my Jiu-Jitsu Master Academy, which is at jiu-jitsumasterclassacademy.com. And remember, you guys, if you use podcast, you can get 10% off any of the programs on either of those websites. You might want to wait until our Black Friday Cyber Monday sale, though, which is coming up soon. I'll give you guys more information about that at the beginning of the next episode of the show. Let's dive into my discussion with James Hoffman, who runs the Trap and Roll Soap Company. Peace out. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. And I'm joined today by James Hoffman, who is not a black belt, unlike most of the guests on the show. He's not a brown belt. He's not a purple belt. Sorry, James. I've got to rub it in. After 11 years of training, the dude is still a blue belt. Respect.
Thank you.
Big respect. So we need an explanation, my brother. 11 years as a blue belt, that's you either got really crappy jiu-jitsu, which I don't think is the case, or there's something else at play.
Yeah, so ironically, I started here where I'm back at now in the state of Washington under a guy named Robert Owens. And, you know, life kind of gets in the way and, you know, you move around a lot. Both my wife and I are military. My wife's still active duty, you know, so we lived over in Germany for a couple of years, and there was nothing there except for a Flavio Bering school that was really far out of the way and very expensive. And then, you know, moving to Missouri and a couple other places, there was nothing. You know, jiu-jitsu was still low key. This was probably before, you know, the internet started blowing up and you could search stuff on Google to find a gym near me.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to hold that against you. I'm actually, I think that's pretty amazing that you continued without getting graded. I know a lot of people would have gotten frustrated and given up.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? How are you going to get your next belt? Because you're obviously going to move again in a year or two.
I'm just going to keep moving. It's a progression, you know what I mean? And it's always progress, always, you know, search. Search for the perfect role to steal that from my buddy Pete Roberts. You know, you're never going to reach the top level, right? It always evolves. Jiu-Jitsu always evolves. So I feel like just keep going. Sorry.
Sorry to interrupt you. I'm guessing you must smoke some of the other blue belts who, you know, the dude's trained for a year or two and he gets his blue belt and then he's matched up with you and little does he know, you've trained literally 5 times or 10 times longer than him.
Yes and no. I guess sometimes. You know, it's been on and off. I've had a couple surgeries and some injuries, but you know, as a seasoned blue belt, you learn a little bit more. You can stay relaxed, and you're able to try more stuff instead of going for the kill. But yeah, and I'm not a small guy either. I played loose head prop. So I'm a front row guy, so I'm a pretty big dude too.
That's cool. Do you notice, so for those of you who don't know what loose head prop is, it's a position in rugby. And for the Americans, this thing, rugby is like NFL, but without all the padding and sissy stuff, I guess is the best way to describe it, right?
I guess, yeah, the original NFL, because the ball never went forward, the passes were always back.
So I'm guessing there must be crossover in each direction, or you must have noticed crossover in each direction. Like your jiu-jitsu must have already been at a basal level because of playing rugby, because that's a contact sport.
Yeah, and wrapping and tackling, so takedown or learning how to fall when getting taken down, also, you know, and rolling with the energy of the takedown. Yeah, there's a lot of correlations, explosive strength, you know, breathing, So, yeah.
Does it go the other way? Like, do you find that when you play rugby now that some of the jiu-jitsu stuff's helped you?
Yeah, especially when you have like eight mans that get a little aggressive in the scrum and they want to boot you in the back. You can grab them by the ankles and whatnot. Just saying.
No. That's cool. That's cool. So, James, you are the founder of the Trap and Roll Fight Soap Company,
Yes, sir.
which, first of all, that's a great name for fight soap. I commend you on that. And secondly, I don't want to hear all about it. Like, how did you come to be doing that? That's a pretty niche business within a pretty small niche as it stands.
Yeah.
Well, how did you come to be doing that?
So we lived in El Paso in 2013, and we were training off post and on post at the Fight House on Fort Bliss. And I wasn't there actually at the time, but there was a huge outbreak of ringworm because it's hard to teach the soldiers that the mop that goes in the latrine is not the mop that you're supposed to use for the mats. So there was I think like six or seven of our guys from our academy that also trained there. We would do like a lunch hour session. They ended up getting a ringworm, and I did not get ringworm, but someone in my household did. So I did some research on what would help take away or help, subside or protect of ringworm, and people were like, tea tree, tea tree, tea tree. And there was a soap company in New Mexico that was probably about 45 minutes away from us one way. There's a lady that did handmade soap, and I had talked to her a couple of times, and I was buying soap previous to the breakout from her, and giving it to teammates and using it as myself, and I never had an issue. So I figured, it can't be that hard. I went and talked to her. She told me she couldn't help me, trade secrets and whatnot. There's only four ways to make soap if people are listening to this, so there's no trade secret to it.
Don't you love how like she couldn't help you and just or she wouldn't help you and it might have been, I'm not saying this would have happened, but if she had helped you, it might have led to a business relationship that would have paid huge dividends for her.
Oh, for sure. And that's the thing too, is I tried to explain to her that, look, it's not my niche. Your market is not my market. I'm not going to sell at farmers markets or any of that stuff. I'm trying to sell to combat sport athletes and people that use a mat, so that they can help defend against catching anything. And she was like, she still didn't care. And I was like, all right, that's cool. I respect it. I was a little bit angry, but I still respected it. And then I made some phone calls on that 45-minute drive home, and to figure out what was going to happen next. And I purchased a kit from a company that no longer exists, actually. And I can't, it was like soap making company. I don't remember the generic name, but they closed up shop. I purchased the kit, and I didn't have a respirator, and I'm messing with lye water solution and fats. Yeah, so I did it all outside. I made the loaf, and I tried to sell it to my teammates. And you know how sometimes things goes, like, hey, I got this t-shirt, guys, you want to buy it? And everybody on the internet's like, yeah, I want that. I'll buy that. And then no one buys it. So I made all this soap, and no one wanted it. And I used it, and I really liked it. And then I had one teammate who's actually been an initial backer of me from day one. And he's got like a really really progressive skin irritant. So he it's not psoriasis, I don't remember what it is.
Like eczema, maybe, or something like
Yeah,
that.
but it yeah, and it's high. It's on the yeah, eczema probably. And he's like, I can only use the soap for like 2 weeks, and I gotta toss it. So I made him the bar. I gave him the bar, sorry. He used it, and then he bought everything off of me.
Wow. Because the soap was the first one, he didn't have to change every 2 weeks, or.
Right, correct. It didn't break him out. It didn't break his family out. His family also has the same problem.
Okay.
So his whole entire family uses it. So he'll now, I mean, to this day, so we're almost going on 4 years of the company. He puts in a huge order, and every bar that we have that we sell on our website has been tried and tested on him. to make sure that it's good for him. You know, I mean, not
okay. He's like your
yeah, he's like your pig, but it's not human testing. Great. Not human testing on him. So
okay, that's great. Okay, so please continue. So he bought the first batch.
Yeah, he bought the first batch, and then I made the Chukol bar. So everything, the company originated in El Paso. So Lucha Libre, you know, being so close to the border, you know, Juarez and El Paso are sister cities. And you can drive around El Paso and see that the Latin culture, Mexican culture influence in everything. Street art, cars, you know, wrestling styles. So
yeah, I live in Tucson, which is like 50 miles north of the border with Mexico. So it's very similar out here, actually.
And it almost envelops you. You know, you get to experience stuff that most people from the north, which is where I'm originally from, don't get to experience. So we started with a Lucha Libre, and we started the charcoal soap, and that was the first soap that guy bought, and I put it in his yoga studio. It wasn't even in a jiu-jitsu academy yet; it was in a yoga studio first, and. And then from there on, the bars are basically based on every place that we've lived. So,
oh, smart.
Yeah, so the Chukol bar is, you know, obviously for El Paso. And then we did a body wash. We did two body washes, a Vata wash and Chukol wash, both with the Star of El Paso and the mountains in the label. And then the Tacoma Aroma bar, which is where we are again. It's got the Tacoma Dome and the picture of Puget Sound and some other.
So this is, so basically it runs through a kind of a cycle. So you make a batch that's based on a place you live, and then the next batch is based on another place, and then eventually you come back around to the beginning.
Yeah, it's ironic that we came back here after 13 years, but yeah, we're back here. I still got to make a Kansas City bar and then a Germany bar. I haven't quite gotten on that yet. But yeah, so I mean, I look at the label and it gives me memories, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I mean, I have a bunch of products as well, and there's a story behind every one of them, you know. There's a lot of thought goes into when you have a small business and you're creating and producing things. It's not just you're saying, oh, let's do it in orange. It's kind of, you know, a lot of thought goes into this stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really respect you for this endeavor of yours. I mean, I can't imagine it's been easy.
Not at all. I'm the only person. So everything is made by hand, wrapped, packaged, touched wow. by me. I've got a guy in El Paso that I've worked with since day one. He does all my labels. You know, and it used to be I could just go over to his house and we could hash out something. Now it's all done by text and email. But yeah, we use everything's detergent free, which means there's no SLS. Sodium lauryl sulfate or any of that jazz, which is an emulsifier, which usually is what makes people have allergic reactions to healthcare products. So,
yeah, I mean, that's something that really freaked me out when I found it out a few years ago, that sodium lauryl sulfate and sodium lauryl sulfate are actually, okay, first of all, they're found in pretty much every major shampoo brand and most body wash brands. But man, you know, mechanics use that to get the grease off like the floors in their
yep.
in their auto shops, and I don't know, dude. I've always thought it's just that cannot be good for you to put on one of the most sensitive parts of your body, your scalp, right?
Yeah, very much so on the crown. Yeah, it can be super dangerous. I mean, you think about how porous the body is and how much it can, you know, it can absorb. You know, so
yeah, it's messed up, dude. And I've always looked at it. At shampoo is one of those things that I know a few people who they just wash their hair with water, with warm water. They rinse it thoroughly and they brush their hair every day, and their hair is perfectly healthy and shiny, and it doesn't smell at all because your hair is apparently a self-cleaning mechanism. And yet we have this whole industry. Just think of how many bottles of shampoo and all the shampoo commercials and all the trucks that are driving pallets of shampoo around the country and shipping it around the world. this whole industry is just based on bullshit. It's based on like something that does the opposite of what's intended. It's supposed to make your hair cleaner and healthier, and it basically ends up doing the opposite because it overstimulates the oil production, and it just blows my mind. And I just think of how many things there are like that in the world. It's a bit of a rant of mine. I find it absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, you're stripping your hair of the natural oils that it, you know, exactly what you said. I mean, they used to take one bath. They take a bath when they're born and a bath when they die, you know, in, you know, 1400s or earlier than that too. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. So
I'm not saying that that's the way to go.
Right.
But I just often think about that, how many things there are in life that, I mean, low-fat diets is another one, when this whole industry, people built whole careers out of just like a total inaccuracy. And I absolutely love identifying stuff like that. It's almost like it just gives me that kind of, I think they identify that some people get a kind of a high from finding out mind-blowing materials or mind-blowing facts, and I think I'm one of those people, and I love thinking about stuff like that, that the whole world in any major department store or drugstore or supermarket, you can walk in and find these aisles filled with bottles of stuff that people are paying their hard-earned money for that are actually detrimental. It just absolutely blows my mind.
Yeah, like I probably shouldn't say it by name, actually, retract. There's one that's like $30 for a shampoo and then $30 for a conditioner. So that's $60, you know, for a 24-ounce, I guess, bottle of shampoo and conditioner. And, mm-hmm. you know, it says it's supposed to be natural from a root specifically found in Hawaii. And like you said, you walk down these aisles and different stores throughout the universe, all right, throughout the world, sorry, and you could probably find this bottle. So how overprocessed is that? Are we stripping that area of that that nutrient or of that fruit that's being used? You know what I mean? Because it's you keep overusing stuff. Same thing with palm oil, as people are, you know, we try not to have any palm oil in our soap just because, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, I mean, last thing to say for me to say on this super depressing subject of environmental degradation, but look, it's not a new thought, but like that Fiji water, it just blows my mind that someone is going to drink water that has been flown using God knows how much jet fuel around the world, you know, just so that they can feel a little bit better and claim they're drinking slightly purer water. It's fucking ridiculous. No. There's just no other way to put it, right?
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, I guess it's an image thing when it comes down to it. Also, think about the plastic bottle that they're using.
Yeah.
Think about all the plastics. You go to the store and all you see is plastic.
Yeah.
You know, we just switched our packaging from all plastic to just shrink wrap that's actually sourced that's made in the U.S. and then recycled cardboard, so that a lower carbon footprint. And I thank Chris Hoyter for that, because Chris Hoyter and I have had numerous conversations, and he was like, "You need to change this up, man." And I was like, "Yeah." You know, and I'd already been I'd already bought into packaging like 2,000 of these clamshells. You know, and every time I make one, I felt horrible because I'd have to write somebody and be like, "Please recycle this." you know, like.
Yeah, but at least you know, have a conscience about it.
Yeah, I mean, we're stripping, like you said, man. You're stripping, you know, natural resources and you're taking water from Fiji to fly it to Washington State, which is, who knows, a 15-hour flight. Just so that you could feel good about yourself. So.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, dude. So you've done a lot of traveling yourself, and I know we spoke before we started recording. We spoke about South Africa. You visited there a few times. Besides that, where have you been? And more importantly, where did you absolutely love?
Bavaria. I probably loved the most. I lived in Unter Franconia, so I lived in the lower Franconia section. It's like 3.5 hours from Munich. had a lot of good experiences being an American living in a village of 500 Germans.
Damn.
And it was a Catholic village too. And it was funny because you go to the next town over and it was cut. So it was cut between Catholic and Lutheran. And I thought that was just crazy. And the church that was in the town, which I could hear the bells ringing every morning and every night, was built, I think, in 900 AD.
Mm-hmm.
So Germany's probably the best. I really enjoyed St. Petersburg, Russia.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
that's a place I've never been in Russia, and I'm getting more and more interested in checking it out.
It's cool. We went there in 2012, before a lot of crazy stuff happened and before they started closing off visas to Americans. And we did basically we hung out in the Baltics. One of my really good friends from high school, he was a Norwegian exchange student. He still lives in Oslo, and we went out for his wedding. So we made a trip of it. Went to Stockholm, went to Helsinki, and then spent a week in Oslo, and then in St. Pete's too. But Copenhagen, man, I don't know if you've ever been to Copenhagen, but
I have actually. I love
Copenhagen. Denmark is amazing. The food's amazing. The people are amazing. I wish that America could get on this mass transit thing, you know, more bike lanes, and think about all the, sorry, I might go down a rabbit hole too. Just think about all the electric bicycles, you know, all the power assist bicycles that we have now. I'll hold a 24-hour charge that'll has like a 300-mile range on a bicycle, and you're barely even pedaling, you know?
Yeah, it's wild. It's absolutely wild. A friend of mine said it to me when I was a teenager. He was a very smart guy. And he said, if you think about the nature of transport, and in particular four-wheeled vehicles, it's just not, it's not smart. It's not progressive. If you want to go from point A to B, you have to lug 1.5 tons of steel with you. It just doesn't make sense. I've always had that in my mind. My man, something else I find interesting about your story is that you train with your wife, right? Which I know is becoming more and more common these days, but you guys have been in it for the long haul, right? You've been training together for a while.
It's ironic. She didn't come into jiu-jitsu until 7 years later. And one of the guys in El Paso asked her to come to practice, and she wasn't about it. And then she started, yeah. And she's been training on and off for 5 years, 4 years now.
And, I mean, it's a bit of a, I don't want to say a weak question, but it's the expected question. Has this made you guys, your relationship stronger? Or does it cause, because I always imagine that I always feel very relieved that my wife doesn't train jiu-jitsu, because that's my time, dude. When I go to jiu-jitsu, I don't really, I'm trying to get out of the house. I'm trying to get away from the routine, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's an interesting dynamic, to say the least. We're both from New England, so we're very – I don't know if you met any New Englanders, Bostonians.
Many, yeah.
Yeah. We're not so – I wouldn't say we're the nicest people, but we're a little high-strung, hardcore, if you will. So we train primarily not with each other. We train in the same vicinity, because the problem is that sometimes when we train, it's all depends, man. Because sometimes it's a good day and sometimes it's a bad day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And there could be stuff bugging you earlier about a relationship that might come out on the mat, and somebody might get their feelings hurt. But to caveat off of that, I enjoy it. I enjoy rolling when we're flow rolling, not when we're trying, you know, to best each other during a
Because you're just minute. You'll smash her, right? Obviously.
And
let's just call it what it is.
Yeah. I mean, and then you go neon belly and you're still trying to be like polite about it. So it's neon side rib, but it still hurts because, you know, it's a pretty big leg. And sometimes there's tears, sometimes there's laughter, but, you know, it's a release I think that many more couples are doing it. It builds a stronger bond, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, sometimes I have mats in my home, and my wife and I will play fight a little bit. And I just think to myself, man, even if you knew jiu-jitsu, this would not go well for you. You know, it's just the size discrepancy is just too big. And it's always fun.
I have to say that she's probably a better competitor than me. I've watched her dismantle many dudes and many girls actually larger than her.
Wow.
And she doesn't back down. She steps up. She definitely steps up to the challenge.
That's great.
Yeah, and so we have mats also at our house. We just we purchased them recently.
Mm-hmm.
Because the job that she's in right now, she doesn't have a lot of free time.
Okay.
So we can roll them out whenever. And we have a friend coming into town tomorrow who's a world heavyweight female black belt. She's going to hang out with us for a week, so we'll probably do a lot of training in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
But
very cool.
It gives you something, you know, like just to go back on that, it gives you something more to talk about at the dinner table. You know what I mean?
Can you expand upon that a little bit?
So depending on what kind of household that you grew up in, most people used to sit around the table and, you know, ask about your day or
mm-hmm.
You know, how are your grades, Timmy, yada, yada, yada. And ours mm-hmm. is sometimes like, well, how did you get out of that arm bar? You know what I mean? And so you can like break it down or, you know, talk conceptual type things about jiu-jitsu. So it just gives us another option to talk about.
Okay, fair enough. Talk about that makes sense. James and brother, I really do appreciate your time. And as I said, I'm always a fan of anyone who's running a business in the jiu-jitsu industry. So if people wanted to find out more about your pretty cool looking soap, I tried a bar recently. Yeah, I did. Mike Velotta gave me a bar of it.
Yep.
The charcoal soap, and it was pretty cool. If people want to find out more, where should they go?
Trap and Roll Soap Company online. We have an Instagram account. It's Trap and Roll Soap. Facebook, Trap and Roll Soap. And then me, James Hoffman, on Facebook, though. If I don't know you, I probably won't accept you.
Okay.
But yeah, you can find us there. You can find us in other places. One of our big supporters is Kansas City BJJ. That is my black belt. That's Jason Bircher. He holds a lot of our product. And we're in a couple of academies all over the world. Hopefully we'll be in Japan and Guam here in the next couple of months. So if you're looking to not pay the shipping, there's a list on our website of people that carry our products.
Awesome.
And you can find them.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, James.
Thank you, Nick.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. James is very chilled out and laid back. At times, I didn't know quite what to make of it, but then I realized about halfway through the conversation that's just his nature. He's just a very zen, chilled out kind of dude. And it's kind of pleasant talking to someone like that. I really appreciated the fact that he didn't really seem to have any kind of agenda. And he was pretty open about the difficulties of running a business or starting and running a business in this industry. So, guys, I hope you enjoyed that. And remember, it is our Black Friday sale coming up very soon. It's probably a week away by the time you hear this. It's going to be big. We've got a whole bunch of really good specials on all of our awesome equipment and gear and instructional products. And in the next episode of the podcast, I'll give you guys the details. Until then, peace out.